Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit TabardInn.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international destination and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the gastronomic and economic virtues of a location. Part travel show, part current affairs, Native recognizes the fact that food culture and commerce are everywhere and takes the opportunity to examine this relationship by using the eyes, ears, and taste buds of farmers, chefs, journalists, and the like. Today, we are going to Turkey, specifically to the Black Sea region. And to help take us there, we are talking to Robin Eckhart. Robin is a citizen of the world and the author of the blog Eating Asia. Her work has been featured in The Guardian, the BBC, Wall Street Journal, Serious Eats, among many others. And her blog was named Savoir's Editor's Choice Best Culinary Blog of 2014. Phew! Hi, Robin!
Hello. Brianna.
There you are. Okay.
Hello.
I know you're
okay. Very far
away, so just getting working at the kinks of the technical difficulties. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So where are you in Turkey right now?
I'm actually talking to you from Diyarbakir, which is a primarily Kurdish city in the southeast. But I recently left the Black Sea after a week of work there, and I think that's the region we'll be talking about.
Absolutely. So the Black Sea coast of Turkey, can you describe it for me, like really take me there as far as the landscape, the climate?
Okay, I'll try. Sure. Turkey's Black Sea coast is quite long. It runs the length of the country's northern edge from Bulgaria in the west to the Georgian Republic in the east. It's rocky, it's mountainous, there are mountain ranges running the length of the coast. There are foothills that plunge directly into the sea at some parts, and as you approach the eastern edge of the coast, there are, to be honest, some larger cities that are not so attractive. In the western part of half of the coast, there are some smaller towns and fishing villages. The climate is temperate. It's warm and muggy in the summer, and this year it actually remains so even now. We're having a warm year in Turkey this year. It will be cool and crisp later in the fall and in early spring, and usually snow falls only at the higher elevations, although I've seen flurries and snow that doesn't really stick on the coast. It rains a lot, and all of that moisture makes the region incredibly lush. So think high passes and conifer carpeted peaks, incredibly green grass-covered plateaus, perfect for grazing, lots of trees, especially walnut trees, lots of vegetation, and a lot of farming and animal husbandry. And if you were to go to the Black Sea coast, one of the things that you would notice, which I think is characteristic of the coast, are traditional wooden houses. And although these are disappearing, you can still spot them. They're very dark-colored timber houses. They'll be tucked into hillsides or way up on the tops of peaks. Some are roofed with a very interesting uneven slate-like rock from the sea. And they're just incredibly beautiful. And even more interesting and characteristic of the region is that still standing next to many of these houses are these gorgeous, often intricately carved timber storage structures that are called ambar or nyla, depending where on the coast you are. They're raised off the ground and supported on these huge, heavy timber legs, and they're for storing the harvest away from animals. So that's kind of the Black Sea in a nutshell. That's a bad pun, but anyway.
So a very traditional landscape, not much of like a modern structure, or feels like a little bit you're going back in time. Is that the case?
Well, I don't want to overstate it. I mean, you certainly, the eastern half of the coast is marred, I mean, to be honest, is marred by a white expressway that was completed in 2007 and that buried, unfortunately, miles and miles of coastline. Mm-hmm. But as you drive inland and certainly on the west part of the coast, you will still find these villages that consist of these timber houses. I mean, it's very hard to find anywhere in Turkey that's not, doesn't have modern construction these days, and I think cement blocks are sort of the scourge of a lot of the country, but there still is a lot of very traditional structures still standing on the Black Sea, and whole villages composed of them.
Interesting. So you mentioned you were working up in the north recently. What are you doing in Turkey right now?
I'm working on my first cookbook, which is on the foods of eastern Turkey and Istanbul. So most of the Black Sea coast that I know is sort of from the middle of the coast east to the border with Georgia.
And why Turkey? Why are you, your first cookbook's going to be there? What made you fall in love with the country?
Oh, gosh. I visited in 1998 sort of on a whim, on a three-week vacation when I was actually living in Shanghai at the time. I visited with my husband, who's a photographer, David Hagerman, who's actually doing the book with me. And we just sort of fell in love with Turkey. I don't know anyone who's visited Istanbul, actually, who didn't fall in love with it. And we did, and then we also rented a car that trip and drove for a couple of weeks inland and east, and just fell in love with the landscapes, the varied landscapes, and the foods, the varied foods, and the people. I think Turkish people must be some of the most warm and generous people I've ever met.
What makes the Black Sea coast different from other parts of the country?
Well, the sea, first of all. To me, the Black Sea, I'm sort of attracted to any place that's on a body of water. And so you have the Mediterranean coast in the south, and you have the Aegean and Marmaris in the west. I love sort of forbidding bodies of water, cold bodies of water. I'm not much of a tropic sort of person. The Black Sea is, it just has this, and the region sort of has this air about it. It's beautiful and it's mysterious. The way that on a winter day the sea will look, you know, inky and black and almost scary. And then last week when I was up there, it was just sort of this beautiful, placid cobalt blue. So I think the sea itself makes the Black Sea a very different place. And the landscape is quite distinctive. The fact that it is so incredibly lush because of the amount of rainfall that it gets and its greenness, which, you know, you can drive just like from the middle of the Black Sea, you can drive just 4 or 5 hours south and you're in central Anatolia, which is very kind of brown and almost desert-like in some spots. So it's almost when you're driving north from central Anatolia and you hit the Black Sea coast, you hit the Black Sea region because the region starts a little inland, it's almost like you're entering another world. It's fascinating. And Black Sea people are, they're different. They seem sort of reserved and very proper when you meet them. But once they know you, they're just, you know, Turks are warm and generous. They're even more warm and generous, and they have a great sense of humor, which is often rather on the dry side, and I really like that.
Well, let's
think of too. Obviously, that's why we're talking.
Well, let's get into the food a little bit. I want to play a little game called Breakfast, Lunch, Dinner. So I want you to tell me your favorite things to eat from each of those meals while you're on the Black Sea. So we'll start with breakfast.
Okay, well, first of all, I can't pick favorites. I could honestly say that I absolutely love anything that Black Sea cooks, whatever, put in front of me. I have a few favorites. I guess I have a few things I eat more often. To breakfast, if I'm on the far eastern side of the Black Sea coast, I might have mulama, which you could think of as a sort of Black Sea fondue. It's essentially lots of butter, and the area is known for its butter. With a couple of local cheeses melted and cooked together with cornmeal. And you scoop it up and eat it with bread. And it's fabulous. And then if I'm more in the center of the coast in a town that I quite like, one of the only really truly fishing towns left that has a fishing port right in the town called Sinop, there's a pastry called Nokul, which is, if anyone out there listening knows Borek, it's something like a Borek, but more on the pastry side, and it's filled with walnuts, raisins, and sprinkled with sugar, and it's a big, heavy, coiled pastry that's absolutely delicious. So I could go with either of those for breakfast.
It sounds like a pretty hearty breakfast.
lunch and dinner are sort of interchangeable, but if I'm traveling in Turkey, lunch will usually be my bigger meal because that's the time when a lot of restaurants that serve a bunch of dishes on, you know, which is sort of derogatively called a steam table, but which is actually where they set out soups and stews and that kind of thing. That sort of thing is more plentiful at lunch, so I'll usually eat my big meal at lunch. So I might go somewhere that has bulama, which is a type of, it has many iterations along the Black Sea coast. It's a fish dish. It can be sort of stewy or kind of like a bake or a saute. My favorite version was one that a fisherman cooked for me in the small town of Sinop, and it was basically fresh anchovies cleaned and tossed with lots and lots of parsley and dill and onion and garlic, all spread in a skillet, sprinkled with white wine, lemon slices laid over, and then cooked until it had a little caramelization on the bottom with the onions and the garlic, and the anchovies were sort of infused with these herbs, and there was a lot of juice on the bottom, and we just sort of ate the anchovies with our fingers and sopped up all the juices with fresh bread. So that would be, if I could ever have that dish again on his boat, that would be my preferred lunch.
How is the fish cooked?
sorry?
How is the fish cooked?
The fish was cooked in a pan in a skillet.
Okay.
Mixed with parsley and dill. Yeah, it was delicious. But there are many types of bulama. And another thing that I really love about the Black Sea is the love of green vegetables, green leafy vegetables, especially something called kara lahana, which translates to black cabbage, but which is a really sort of a type of collard green. It's very similar to collards. And that will be cooked in soup with cracked dried corn, and it's absolutely delicious. Sometimes there's meat added, sometimes there's not. Or it might be made into dolma, mm-hmm. Filled with leftover fish, leftover hamsi, or with rice and meat. Or it might be made into this really wonderful dish that I had the first time last week called esme, which is basically these collard-like greens cooked down and then sort of pounded with butter and mixed with cornmeal to just make something that I guess my husband would call a shoveler, just the kind of dish you just can't stop eating, you know. It was delicious.
And I assume all these ingredients are coming from the local area, from farmers, fishermen.
Absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the thing about, and something that has inspired me to do this book, is that once you get beyond Istanbul, especially here out east, everywhere out east, it's very much a locavore diet, and it's not because it's cool to be a locavore or that people are rediscovering being locavores. Out here, people always have. They eat what is grown and harvested and fished and raised around them. And so, obviously, on the Black Sea coast, the fishing industry is huge, and fish is a big part of the diet. Collards are, these collardy greens are the main green. They get about 5 crops a year. There's
wow.
also things like chard and lots of foraged vegetables, mm-hmm. foraged mushrooms at certain times of the year. It's a very, and corn, and that is also what really distinguishes Black Sea cuisine, is this use of corn in almost every possible way, and it's really not eaten so much outside the region.
Interesting. Well, moving on, when you're eating all of this, what are you drinking?
Well, just sort of like anywhere else in Turkey. You can, I mean, I have a fishmonger friend in Sinop, and he would say, if you eat fish, you absolutely have to drink rakı. And I do sometimes. I mean, it's a classic combination, but not all the time. Certainly not for lunch. I wouldn't be able to function the rest of the day if I did. If a restaurant was serving, you know, white wine, I might have a glass of white wine. Otherwise, I would drink Iron, which is a salty yogurt drink that I absolutely love. I think it's incredibly refreshing. I might drink Şalgam, which is, it tastes a lot like pickle juice. It's made from black turnips. It's a sort of fermented drink made from black turnips, and it's salty. I might drink on the Black Sea, especially something called Rekeli Suyu. One thing that Black Sea cooks do is they preserve all of their wonderful fruits, their autumn fruits, in these kind of fruit paste called Rekeli, which might be spread on bread or might be stirred into yogurt. And also, in the case I'm talking about, would be sort of stirred together with water to make a really refreshing, highly intense fruit drink. So that's something I really like to drink when I'm there.
Wow, that sounds really special, like something you can only get there. So we are going to take a quick break.
It's really special.
But stay with us. When we come back, we'll be learning more about Turkey and looking a little bit more closely at some history and some current events going on there. Be right back.
You are listening to Beast in Air, Beast in Water by Snowmine.
Following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you are listening to Native on Heritage Radio Network, and we are talking to Robin Eckhart about Turkish Black Sea cuisine. So before we get back to that, Robin, you live most of the year in Malaysia, is that right?
I live about half the year in Malaysia, yeah, in Penang.
And, I mean, you're a traveler to exotic locations. And as someone who works in these areas, I want to talk about some of your experiences with traveling in Turkey. Are there language barriers that you have to overcome? Is transportation, is it pretty easy to get around in the country?
Turkish. I'm not fluent, but I studied for 3 years in university, you know, in another era. And I remember enough of it that I can get around well. I think it probably makes researching the book a little easier. That said, the first time that I traveled in Turkey and We drove by ourselves, my husband and I, for 3 weeks across the country, way off season. I didn't speak a word of Turkish, and neither did he, and we managed perfectly well. So I'm a great believer in, in using food as an entree to culture, and in sign language, and being willing to make a fool of yourself. I think that if you're willing to make a fool of yourself and try almost anything to be understood, then, you know, there's probably very little that you can't communicate. And I certainly made enough of a fool of myself in my time in foreign settings. So, no, I would say you don't need to speak Turkish. We usually get around by car. We usually rent a car. The bus system is great here. There's no problem with getting around by bus, and there are now cheap airlines, so it's easy to get around by flights. But what I like about renting a car is that I can stop wherever I want. We can go to out-of-the-way villages, which is where we spend most of our time recently. It lets you go anywhere and everywhere, and driving here, especially out east, is perfectly safe. The roads are often empty, really, so... I'd certainly rather drive here than in Boston, where I used to live. So access is great.
Wonderful. So I'm looking at a map of the Black Sea, and you see Bulgaria and Moldova, Romania, Ukraine, Georgia, Russia, all have coasts on this body of water. And it's not exactly the place anyone would describe as the most stable in the world today. So has any of what's going on in the region had an effect on the realm of food at all? Have you seen since you've been there?
I really haven't noticed any effect at all on the Black Sea. I can only speculate. I mean, I know that when Russia barred imports of food from the USA and Canada and the EU and Australia, Turkey became an obvious food exporter substitute. And I read recently that Russia has approved the importation of Turkish dairy goods into dairy products into Russia. And I don't know where these dairy products will come from, but I do know that the Black Sea is a huge producer of dairy. There's a lot of animal husbandry up there. And much of the traffic, the truck traffic to Russia from Turkey runs along the Black Sea. If you get within about an hour of the Georgian border, you'll actually see trucks lined up waiting to go through the border point. So I can't see any of this adversely affecting the Black Sea. And if its producers are positioned right, they'll probably benefit. I think Turkey is predicting that they'll double their exports of fruit and vegetables to Russia in the next year. So if any of those are coming from the Black Sea, then producers there will certainly benefit.
Interesting. And that's a good segue to kind of look more back at the history of the region, all those countries we mentioned, and the Ottoman Empire, which we could spend a lifetime talking about, you know, once included Greece, Tunisia, Egypt, Sudan, Israel, Syria, Hungary, Russia, and I could just go on and on because the empire was so vast. Just the demographics of that list and the trade mecca that the Ottoman Empire was internally, but also kind of as the vertex point between Asia and Europe throughout the Middle Ages, the Industrial Revolution, all the way up to the end of World War I when things kind of started to dissolve. How do each of those cultures influence cuisine today? Do you still see influence of Greek cuisine, Mediterranean, Egyptian, more like spices, or from North Africa?
That's a really big topic. I'm just going to talk about the Black Sea.
Sure.
The history of the Black Sea is really interesting. The Greeks settled it a long time ago. There's actually a spot on the Black Sea coast where Jason and the Argonauts were said to have stopped in their, you know, quest for the Golden Fleece. The cuisine, and if you're talking about the Ottoman Empire, in Istanbul, you have these like great complicated dishes that really speak to its role as a crossroads. You know, pilavs rich with nuts and currants and spices, and burek filled with exotically spiced meat, and these very complex desserts like, you know, pudding made with chicken breast shredded as finely as hair. But once you get well beyond Istanbul, which again is where I'm spending a lot of my time, it really is first about locavorism.
Mm-hmm.
Locavore, you know, what's grown there. So, yes, the Greeks were on the Black Sea. Do we see a lot of, and were there until World War One, actually. Do we see a lot of Greek influence in the Black Sea? There's a dish called pilaki, which is a fish dish that's made with, again, depending on the cook, it varies, tomatoes, onions, green chilies, and a little bit of vinegar sometimes to sour it. That's obviously a Greek name, and I know that they have it in Istanbul. So that there's some evidence of Greek influence. You see a lot of influences from Georgia. A lot of Georgians and Cherkes or Circassians and people from the Caucasus moved west during the Russian period, the Russian Empire, and settled along the Black Sea and a little sort of inland, sort of in the far northeastern corner of Turkey. And you see it in people's appearances. I mean, you have blonde people with blue eyes, people with very sort of not the typical Turkish sort of face that we imagine when we think of what is a Turkish person. And then you see those influences in the food. I think that the pide, the cheese-filled boat-shaped pide that the Black Sea is so known for, and the cheese actually comes from the Northeast and was introduced by Swiss via Russia, is probably some form of the Georgian cheese-filled bread. You have wide noodles called hangal that are eaten on the far eastern edge of the Black Sea, and the name itself, hangal, suggests that maybe it was from Georgia. You have those sort of like silk, you know, what we imagine of as like Silk Road, culinary crossroads, heavy spices that you find in the southeast up there? No, that's because, you know, again, Turkey is very, you know, regions are very locavore and cooks are very provincial and they're very specific to what's grown around them. So,
yeah,
yes,
I think that sounds
results of the Ottoman Empire, but it's not as heavily felt as you might feel it in the southeast. You think more of like influences from, you know, the east.
Okay.
Where Russia and Georgia, what is now Georgia, is.
So my next question, I kind of want to ask about what food culture revolves around. In different parts of the world, food pulls people together for different reasons. And, you know, Thanksgiving would be a great example of a meal in the U.S. that really brings people together. I'm wondering if on the Black Sea, is there any particular celebratory or religious holiday that really is all about the food?
Well, probably the biggest celebratory holiday in Turkey is Kurban Bayram, the Feast of the Sacrifice, which happens, a month and several days after Ramadan ends, and that's coming up in about 3 weeks. I've actually never been here for a Kurban Bayram, and I may be on the Black Sea or just a little inland for it. But that revolves around, you know, basically it's about sacrificing an animal and giving a portion of the animal to the poor. And I am told by various people who are suggesting that I come to their house for Kurban Bayram, is that it's basically 3 or 4 days of eating. Obviously a lot of meat, because you've either sacrificed an animal, or these days people often pay a butcher to do it for them and then donate the meat. But it's just sort of a celebration of togetherness. Everyone goes home for the holidays. You cook a lot. You eat a lot. That is probably maybe the equivalent of our Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And then one thing that's really sort of, this is also uniquely Black Sea, what I would call a celebration is when Hamsi season starts. Hamsi are anchovies on the Black Sea. And anchovies, it's like a religion on the Black Sea. And I've been there when the season starts, usually between now and, say, end October. And it is, I mean, there's just, people are excited, they're thrilled, they're rushing to the fishmonger, they're buying, you know, kilos of anchovy, people are grilling anchovies in the street and inviting people over to try them. And, I mean, there's just, it's hard to explain unless you experience it, but it is, anchovies are a religion on the Black Sea, and when the season starts, it is like the biggest gift of the year, and everyone's very excited. It's a great time to be there.
That sounds amazing. I think I saw a piece that you wrote about that at some point, about the anchovies, and it definitely looked inviting, and the pictures were a great accompaniment to. It kind of took you there and made you see why everyone would be so excited about it, for sure.
Oh, yeah. You got to go during anchovy season if you're going to go to the Black Sea.
Well, we are about out of time, but before we go, I want to throw out a couple of facts about Turkey, and maybe you can help me with this, or maybe it'll be a little piece of trivia for you. Besiktas, is this a neighborhood in Istanbul?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Sure, it's Besiktas.
The name of the neighborhood.
Besiktas, I think it's like in northern, yes. Can you say it one more time?
It's the neighborhood in along the Bosphorus.
So do you know the one of the sister cities to that part of Istanbul?
I used to go to a kaimak shop there that recently closed, unfortunately, and I go to a bakery there.
But it's actually one of Brooklyn's sister cities, so I think it's a really interesting connection from where I'm sitting right now in Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, all the way over to Turkey. Second little piece of trivia, Turkey is the world's largest producer of hazelnuts, accounting for almost 75% of total world production. So I'm looking at you, Nutella.
Yes. It's a problem this year.
Yeah, I heard about that.
There was a big frost in April and lots of rain. And we were actually, the day we left, we were with a hazelnut producer. And well, she was pleased because her trees somehow were unaffected, and she's getting something like 12 lira a kilo this year, whereas last year she only got 5. But, they're the world's biggest producer, and this could spell trouble for Nutella lovers. That's what I've heard, anyway.
And lastly, Turkey has 10 world heritage sites, including the ancient city of Troy. Have you ever visited the site?
I assume Ephesus is a site. Mm-hmm. So I've been there. Göbekli Tepe. I'm not sure if Göbekli Tepe in the southeast is a site, but it should be. And I visited that. Oh, God. That's a really hard trivia question. I travel for food, Brianna. I don't go to sites.
On your day off, maybe. Well, lastly, as Robin mentioned, her book on Turkish cuisine is forthcoming. But in the meantime, run, do not walk, over to eatingasia.typepad.com for a heavy dose of Turkish and Asian food content. Be prepared to salivate. And Robin, where can people find out more about you? Twitter, Instagram?
I'm Eating Asia on Twitter. The photographer half of Eating Asia is recently new to Instagram, and he's at Dave Hagerman on Instagram and also on Twitter. I have to give him credit for making Eating Asia beautiful. And we have a Facebook page, Eating Asia. It's all Eating Asia.
Excellent. Yeah, his pictures are definitely, they will make you hungry and give you a heavy dose of wanderlust, so. Well, Robin, thank you so much for being with us today. Safe travels. We might need to have you on again to talk about Malaysia or one of the other dozens of places that you spend time in or have traveled to. But until then,
I'd love to talk about Penang sometime, yeah.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear about it. But until we get that chance, that's all for Native today. We will be right back here next week when I will be talking to Jeff Orlick about a place a little closer to home. But you'll have to tune in to find out. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.